Nandana Braja Janara Jana Jamuna Tira Manachari Jayam Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parivraja Kacharya Ashutra Shutushu Yishimari Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Raja Granta Shima Bhagavatam Ki Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Nitai Gopamandi All glories to the Samnavadis, all glories to Shishi Gura and Gauranga. O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. The word-to-word meaning ata, otherwise, anaya, this, api, even, na, not, bhavata, of your exalted personality, igyagya, by performance of sacrifice, urubhara bharaya, encumbered by much paraphernalia, samuchitam, required, artam, use, iha, here, upalabha mahe, we can see. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation, we have engaged in your worship with many things and have offered sacrifices unto you. But we think that there is no need for so many arrangements to please your lordship. Purport, Srila Rupa Goswami says that if one is offered varied foods but has no appetite, the offering has no value. In a big sacrificial ceremony, there may be many things accumulated to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But if there is no devotion, attachment, or love for the Lord, the arrangement is useless. The Lord is complete in Himself, and He does not need anything from us. However, if we offer Him a little water, a flower, and a tulsi leaf, He will accept them. Bhakti, devotional service, is the main way to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is not a question of arranging huge sacrifices. The priests were regretful, thinking that they were not on the path of devotional service and that their sacrifice was not pleasing to the Lord. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Om Agyanta Mirandasham Giranjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manopishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadhati Swapadantikam Vanchakalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindubhyarevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. Srila Rupa Goswami says that if one is offered varied foods but has no appetite, the offering has no value. So the idea being discussed in yesterday's verse and this verse also is that with bhakti, everything becomes meaningful, and without devotion, then nothing is meaningful. That's the idea being discussed. Just like if one is offered many nice foodstuffs, but there is no fire in the stomach, no, one is not feeling hungry, then one will not be attracted to those foodstuffs. So similarly, If one is to offer many things in a show of devotion to Krishna, but without actual fervor of devotion to Krishna, then it is not attractive to Krishna because there's no less fire to, whet his appetite, the language Ayendra Prabhu used to like to use a lot. And therefore, although a very grandiose arrangement is made, he is not attractive. But with one drop of devotion to Krishna, real devotion to Krishna, that one drop is sufficient to create fire in the stomach for Krishna and attract him to our services. Just like if you're not hungry because there's no fire in the stomach, then so much grand arrangement, big feast there, you feel, oh, no thank you, no thank you. Even if it's pizza and all these things, you feel not attracted. But if you're feeling very hungry, then the big arrangement is very nice, right? Just like another analogy Prabhupada has used, we can line up so many zeros, but without the one of Krishna in front, then so many zeros is just zero value only. So the idea is that we may have so many abilities, intelligence, this, that, but if there is no devotion to Krishna, then it's just so many zeros lined up. But if you add the one of Krishna in front, then so many zeros actually have value, right? You know, two zeros means 100, three zeros means 1,000, four zeros means 10,000, like that. So so then so many zeros actually would have meaning if there's devotion. So the main thing is that devotion should be there. Otherwise, Krishna is not attractive. So every living entity has his potential in love of Krishna. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sadhu Kabunoi Shravanadi Shuddha Chitte Karayai Udoi. Everyone has their potential in love of Krishna. And the process of Krishna consciousness is arousing that potential and love of Krishna through the processes of Shravanam and Kirtanam, etc. That's what the verse says. And then the fire of devotional service first purifies one's own impurities, which makes them attracted to Krishna. Because actually this verse that Prabhupada is mentioning from the Padyavali, I looked it up yesterday. The verse actually talks about how if the devotees are performing devotional service, doing the activities of devotion without devotion to Krishna, then those activities won't satisfy oneself. That's actually what I forgot to bring Padavali down today. And the verse is actually mentioning if one's performing the activities of devotional service, then those activities will not satisfy one on a lack of devotion, due to a lack of devotion. And when one has devotional service, then one gets increasing enthusiasm from those activities of devotional service. That was the verse actually mentioned here by Srila Prabhupada from the Padyavali. So on the one hand, so there's two dilemmas. One dilemma is that on the one hand, we are not attracted to Krishna. And due to the lack that there is an insufficient fire in Krishna's stomach to attract us to attract him to us, so also we're devoid of Krishna's, let's say, glance, in a sense. Right? Does it make sense? So we have to increase the fire of devotional service in order to attract us to Krishna. And by the increase of the fire of devotional service, that increase of the fire of devotional service actually increases the fire in Krishna's stomach, so to speak. And that attracts him to us also. That is the power of devotional service to Krishna. Other processes of yoga don't do anything to increase the fire in Krishna's stomach. So they remain bereft of the mercy of Krishna. And as a result, they become overcome by strong desires for material enjoyment, which is not easy to surpass. There's a verse I'm forgetting the verse. I like this verse, but I'm forgetting it. Yapada pangaja palasya vilasya bhakti. You always hear me quote this verse, but anyway, hear it again. Yapada pangaja vilasya palasya bhakti. Karmasha yang gratitam ugratanyanti santa tadwana riktamatayo yatayopirudo shotoganas tam aranam bhajavasudevam. Only the devotees who are offering devotional service to the lotus toes of Krishna, progressing from sadhana to perfection, sadhya, then they're able to overcome the hard-knotted desires of ahankara, which is filled with many, many impressions of karma. Just like we were hearing yesterday about the multi-dimensional blocks and the answer to, we all were really appreciating that there's many multi-dimensional blocks, and those that's due to the hard knot of ahankar, false ego, which is filled with all these impressions. So it's like a hard knot, and it's very hard to untie the knot we have experienced. So one, the devotees of the Lord, by offering devotional service to Krishna, progressing from practice to perfection, they're able to untie this hard knot and attain the services of Krishna. But others, tvadvana rikta matayo, others like the gyanis and the yogis and so on, because they are rikta matayo, means because they are devoid of devotional service to Krishna, they're not able to overcome the strong waves of sense gratification. Shotogana, I mean, the strong waves of sense enjoyment eventually end up taking them out. And therefore, the Kumaras are speaking to Prithu. Yes, they recommend Tam Arunam Bhaja Vasudevam. Therefore, worship Lord Vasudev. Just like if you're in the water, I don't have experience because I'm afraid of the water, so I stay far away. Because I had a couple of drowning experiences when I was young, so I stay clear of water. But I used to see Baywatch in a little mundane thing, and I didn't know this, but from watching Baywatch, I became enlightened in this particular mundane matter. That when someone stands in the waves of the water, the waves are very strong, and they actually subtly pull a person deeper into the ocean. But it's not a very perceptible thing. So in many of the episodes, there would be like kids playing around in the water, having a good time, and the waves would be hitting them, and they're having a great time. But the waves were actually pulling them deeper into the ocean. Then all of a sudden they will be drowning and then looking for help. So similarly, the strong desires for sense enjoyment are like these waves. They hit and we think we're not being so impacted, but they gradually pull us deeper into the ocean of nescience. So the verse that I just quoted is mentioning that the yogis, gyanis, and so on, being devoid of devotional service, those ways of sense gratification actually imperceptibly pull them deeper into the ocean of samsara. They don't get out of maya. Whereas the devotees are able to easily do so by their devotional service, progressing from practice to perfection. So then the idea here is that with the progress of devotional service from practice to perfection, what is happening is an increase of the fire of devotion. And the first feature of such an increase is that one's own impurities are vanquished. And that creates an attraction to Krishna. Otherwise, now we're not so attracted to Krishna on account of a not sufficiently strong fire. And when the impurities are vanquished, not only do we become attracted to Krishna, but then that fire starts to be felt in Krishna's stomach. Oh, I'm feeling hungry. And then that he looks upon that devotee, and Krishna becomes attracted to that particular devotee. There's a verse like that from the Bhagavatam that I was looking here. Yatak ni hema malam jahati dvaptam punaswam bachate charupam atma chakarmanushayam vidhuya ma bhakti yogena bachati atomam. This is a nice verse. I just read the translation. Just as gold, when smelted in fire, gives up its impurities and returns to its pure, brilliant state. Similarly, the spirit soul absorbed in the fire of bhakti yoga is purified of all contamination caused by previous fruitive activities and returns to its original position of serving me in the spiritual world. So the idea, the impurities are removed, and then the fire increases his attraction to Krishna, and Krishna also becomes attracted to that devotee. Without such devotion, then all one's activities are useless. So whether one is full of material desires, or he has a desire for liberation, or he's desireless, in all cases he should perform intense devotional service to Krishna. Tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. His devotional service should be intense. Tivrena, Prabhupada describes, means like a ray of light shining on the back. Like if you go to India or even here in Chicago, when the sun rays are shining, it's very intense. So you want to put on sunblock, or you close the shades, or something, it's too intense to handle. So in that way, if one makes one's devotional service intense, then everything is available in that. Eventually, he will be able to attract the attention of Krishna. So in order to make the devotion intense, then there needs to be a fixed intelligence on his purpose, right? Vyavasa yatmika bhudi ekaha kuru nandana. Bahu shakya nantascha buddhayove avyavisayinam. This verse comes in the Bhagavad Gita. In order to make devotion intense to Krishna, the intelligence has to be fixed on one purpose, ekabuddhi. Otherwise, there cannot be an intensity. There's another type of intelligence called beta atmadi, which means an intelligence which separates the soul, from its true self-interest. Beta means to separate. So beta atmadi, D means intelligence which separates the soul from his real self-interest. It's called, or Krishna's language, bahu shaka hiyanantascha. So that's an intelligence becomes splayed in many different ways. And when there's a splayed intelligence, then any of the activities one is performing is without potency on account of the splayed energy due to being the intelligence being pulled in so many different ways. So in order to make it potent, one has to really be able to fix the intelligence on one particular point or activity. The idea here that I'm trying to express is that one may be attracted to doing many, many activities, thinking that itself to be evidence of his increasing devotion to Krishna. But if those activities are without potency on account of lack of devotion, on account of fixed determination in one method, then so many activities only serve to cause bewilderment and not so much advancement in Krishna consciousness. As mentioned, and even if we're doing one particular activity, but we're increasing the quality in which we're offering that activity, then that is sufficient to attract the attention of Krishna. So we need not be overly concerned about doing more and more and more. This, in the conditioned consciousness, the tendency is for counting. This is a description of Maya means to count. This is one of the definitions given by Acharyas for Maya means to count. So we think if we're doing more in terms of quantity, then we're definitely assuring our progress in Krishna consciousness. But the idea here is you can be doing so much, but if there is no devotion to Krishna, then what is the so many activities you're doing? There's no fire in the stomach. I'm not attracted to any of those activities. So it is so important to increase the potency in which we do whatever activities we're doing. Now, there can be, the fixed intelligence. And what is a fixed intelligence as described by Srila Prabhupada, you know, making the order of the spiritual masters one's life and soul. That allows one, in other words, tendency, especially amongst persons who are new or immature in devotional service, is to try to make the practice intense based on their own intelligence. And in that way, that is called as Gyanam Prayasam. We heard that this Prayasam is deadly to the progress of devotional service. So the Gyanam Prayasam, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, we were reading this yesterday. Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes that there are two types of broad categories of Prayasam. One is called the Gyanam Prayasam, and the other is the Karma Prayasam. And the Gyanam Prayasam, there is the attempt to advance oneself in devotional service to Krishna based on one's own faculties, one's own intelligence, his skills, his qualities, his abilities, and he tries to progress on that. So if one is depending on one's own intelligence for achieving progress in devotional service, rather than combining one's intelligence with descending mercy, that's the idea. It's not like you check out. You know, leave your intelligence at the door, come inside. Oh, you brought your intelligence, you got to get out. Not like that, but you combine your qualities, your intelligence, and so on with descending mercy coming through Guru Parampara. Then that attempt is a right attempt in increasing the intensity in devotional service. But if one is just trying to study the shastras and, you know, glean out many different instructions for getting one's own guidance and how to become more intense in bhakti, then such an attempt only gives way to one's external, extroverted, this is the language of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, wicked, extroverted, materialistic mind. And as a result of giving way to that, one becomes misled and misguided by one's mind and his attempts to progress in devotion to Krishna. So then, Krishna bhakti janma mula hai sarusanga, Krishna prema janme tena punamukya anga. The root cause of actual devotion to Krishna is the shelter of sadhus. This is the most important point. And before our creeper of devotion reaches the lotus feet of Krishna, Srila Rompa Maharaj was describing this in his Vyasa, well, not his Vyasa Puja dress, but the class in the evening time before the Vyasa Puja. Before our creeper of devotion reaches the lotus feet of Krishna, it needs something, some support to move up, to climb, right? A creeper can't grab onto air and then, you know, and reach the top point. But it needs something that it can grab onto, and it's, you know, as it's growing higher and higher and higher. So he was describing how our devotional creeper requires sadhus, as the support in moving our devotion further to the lotus feet of Krishna. That's what this meant. Krishna, bhakti jama mula hai sadhusanga. So the seed of bhakti comes from devotee of Krishna. And the support in which that creeper moves is also the devotees of Krishna. And then Mahaprabhu says, Krishna prema janme tena punamukhi anga. And even after one achieves prema bhakti, the association of sadhus is the most essential anga. Mukhya anga means principal anga. It's translated as essential. So making one's bhakti intense depends on their submission to devotees of Krishna. Otherwise, no question of bhakti. It is simply mental speculation. Simply mental speculation. Without actual shelter, shelter of devotee doesn't mean imagined, it's not an imagined shelter. I like this one, I like that one, I like that one, and I'm taking shelter within my heart. The sadhu have to also accept you also. And the relationship is one of perpetual tutelage. Not like I got one instruction 5 years ago and then according to our acharya's teaching, it is one of perpetual tutelage, which is something that we may not be attracted to. That idea is a little bit heavy for the conditioned soul to digest. But that is the practical element of bhakti, Krishna bhakti. The devotional service, the devotee, comes in three categories, Kanishtha Adhikari, Madhyam Adhikari, Uttama Adhikari. And the Kanishtha Adhikari's position is one of a semblance of devotion to Krishna. And the reason it is one of a semblance of devotion to Krishna and not actual devotion to Krishna, it is described as on account of seeing devotees only as a means to an end. In other words, there is no pure devotional attitude towards bhaktas. And therefore, their bhakti is called only as a semblance of devotion. The reason they are called as devotees is because they have faith in the deity. They have faith that God has a form. Because of that faith, they're able to enter toward the house of bhakti. They haven't actually entered the house of devotion. This is the language described by a tribe. But they're able to move toward the doorway of bhakti. They may move towards the doorway of bhakti, but they're not actually bhaktas yet in the real sense. They're called bhakta abhas or bhakta praya. They look like devotees, but they're not actually devotees. They've only approached the doorway of bhakti, but they have not actually entered the house of bhakti. So then we hear from the teachings of Srila Rupa Goswami, how do you enter the house of bhakti? How do you enter a house? Through the door, right? Probably not through the window, right? You probably enter through the door. The materialistic jiva's attempt is to enter through the window, right? Forget the door, I'm going to climb up the side, you know, see, okay, this door is locked, let me go up the side, see if that door is locked, and then try to go in, I'm into the house of bhakti. No, you enter a house by going through the door, if you're a sensible person. So similarly, so Srila Rupa Goswami has described that the doorway to bhakti, of course there's 10 things he mentions, but of those 10, 3 things he mentions is accepting the lotus feet of Sri Guru, taking initiation from him, and inquiring from him and rendering service. This is the doorway to bhakti. So the Kanishtha Adhikari isn't even a bhakta in the real sense. He is called as a semblance of a devotee. He gets some credit because he has faith in the form of the Lord. But in order to really become devotee, anya vilashita shunyam ganakramadya navritam anukuyena krishnanushulanam bhakta uttama. This is the quality of the Madhyam Adhikari. Madhyam Adhikari has four characteristics: prema, maitri, kripa, upeksha, right? Love for God, friendship with the devotees. What is that? Mercy towards the ignorant jivas and neglect of the envious jivas. So his prema is described as this verse is given, Anya Bilashita. He has pure devotion to Krishna. How he get that pure devotion to Krishna? He walked through the doorway of bhakti, and then he entered into the house of bhakti. That's how he got that. So the doorway of bhakti is a very practical tutelage of this, guidance under of sadhus, Sri Guru. Otherwise, no question of bhakti. Any activities one performs without that mercy is not devotion. It is semblance of devotion. It can help to increase one's sukriti for a valiant try in some future birth. But who wants to take a future birth? Who wants to go for a valiant try in some future birth? We're supposed to be trying to go back home, back to God in this one birth. So we have to be thoughtful about our methods for progress. It is not that we should be haphazard, misled by the emotional experience of conditioned life, right? And then taking shelter of, or identifying with such emotions, haphazardly executing some activities for a sense of temporary solace. That will never help us to progress substantially. Rather, we have to be thoughtful about increasing the fire based on the guidance that we receive from qualified sadhus that we have accepted and they also have accepted us. It has to be a mutual agreement. It cannot be an imagined affair, like hearing, you know, lectures of someone I like and then thinking that that is my shiksha guru. This thing I used to hear so much when I first joined the movement. Oh, yeah, that's my shiksha guru. Oh, he's also my shiksha guru. He's my shiksha guru, too. So I thought, oh, so you just get, you can like pick up shiksha gurus like that. So then, okay, yeah, I think he's my shiksha guru. Oh, he's my shiksha guru. Everyone was shiksha guru like that. Saying very whimsically. But actually, of course, in one sense, in a broad sense, any Vaishnava can be as a shiksha guru. But when it speaks about shiksha guru, it speaks about a committed relationship. You know, like he's giving guidance. Instructions for you as an individual how to make progress in Krishna consciousness like that. So it's not just like trying to glean the essence from a multiple source of information like the shastras or many classes, but very practical tutelage in the realm of devotional service to Krishna. The example that is given is of Ekalevya, who also appeared to have intensity in devotion to Krishna. But it was, but he had no bhakti at all. So the story goes, he went to Dronacharya wanting to be disciple. But Dronacharya could make out the drift of Ekalevya's consciousness, that he was envious of Vaishnavas. He was envious of Arjuna. So he didn't agree to teach him the art because knowledge in the hands of the wrong person is extremely dangerous. So he did not agree. So Ekalevya Prabhu decided to construct a clay murti of Dronacharya, which he offered obeisances to every day and worshiped every day very religiously. And then he began, you know, teaching himself, feeling that actually I'm being inspired by my guru, the porcelain doll on the altar, right? I'm being inspired by my guru to, and then he became very proficient in archery, so much so that one time Arjuna was going through the forest and they saw one dog whose mouth had been shut tight with five arrows around the mouth. The dog wasn't killed, his mouth was just shut tight. That's pretty far out. Imagine if you saw that. And it wasn't like they, you know, closed your mouth and like put it in there very nicely. He shot the arrows into the dog's mouth and closed his mouth tight. That's pretty awesome ability. So Arjuna was like, man, this person's better than me. And Dronacharya had already given benediction that no one would be better than Arjuna in terms of archery. So Arjuna went to Dronacharya saying, there's someone that's out there that's better than me. You've given this benediction. Your benediction is not true. So at that time, Dronacharya went to see what was going on. So then they saw echolalia, you know, as he's shooting, like bullets, you know, shooting arrows. And everyone was amazed to see how proficient he came. So Dronacharya said, "What is this?" And Ekalevya saw, "Oh, Gurudev has arrived." So he ran over and offered his obeisance and said, "Oh, my Gurudev is here. Oh, I'm your guru. Yes, Guru Maharaj. Anything you want, I will do." "Oh, okay, you should give me dakshina." "Yes, what dakshina you want?" "I want your thumb." Immediately, Ekalevya gave his thumb to the guru. Now he was handicapped. He cannot be as proficient in his archery. Many people in India think that Ekalevya was such a good guy, you know, and Arjuna was envious, so he went and told, you know, Dronacharya, and then Dronacharya was so cruel-hearted that he went and didn't appreciate his skill, but rather asked for his thumb due to his undue attachment to Arjuna. Like this, they think, and actually Ekalevya was a very powerful disciple. But this is because they are devoid of the teachings of pure devotion to Krishna. The pure devotee is always right. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's language is, even when a devotee quotes wrong, he is right. And even when a non-devotee quotes right, he is wrong on account of his aversion to Krishna. So the pure devotee is always right. Krishna, of course, is always right. And devotion to Krishna is always the right path. These two are three aspects of one truth. Bhakti, Bhakta, Bhagavan, there are three aspects of one reality. So because Ekalevya looked like he had pure devotion to Krishna or to his guru, but because he was envious of Arjuna, due to his envy of Arjuna, he is not in the realm of bhakti. Not at all. And so Dronacharya can make this out. So then he went and made a clay guru of clay Dronacharya, porcelain doll, and started worshiping that. And he seemingly became powerful through that activity. But actually, due to not actually receiving the mercy of Dronacharya by following his instruction, there was no question of him being in the realm of bhakti. Why did Krishna, in the end, it is seen, that Ekalevya was later on killed by Krishna. So neither Ekalevya was accepted by Bhakta, neither he was accepted in the realm of devotion, neither he was accepted by Krishna. So there was no question of him being an exalted personality. Why is it that Arjuna went and told Dronacharya about the activities of Ekalevya Prabhu? It looks like he was envious, right? I mean, the story is told, it looks like Arjuna was a little envious, right? And many people in India, they think like they're a little envious. Oh, because you can't do it, and then you weren't told. Looks like he was actually Arjuna, as Prabhupada calls him, the leader of the new parampara in the Bhagavad Gita. He wanted to protect the position and the necessity of approaching the Mahant Guru for actual advancement in Krishna consciousness. So, in order to do that, otherwise, people seeing the example of Ekalevya would think, "Oh, I'll also make a porcelain doll of my guru and worship that." There will be no need to approach actual guru and receive his actual guidance. So in order to protect the guru tattva, the truth of the principle of surrender to guru, he told Dronacharya, "This is what is going on. The teachings of devotion are in danger." So then Dronacharya came. Why did he ask for the thumb? It looks like he was too attached to Arjuna and, you know, wanted to give Arjuna an upper hand. Why did he ask for the thumb? For the same reason, of course, to protect bhakti. Now, why did Ekalevya give the thumb? This is the part that makes the story confusing. Because he looked so committed. Dronacharya said, "Give me your thumb." He didn't protest or anything. He didn't argue. He immediately gave the thumb. So he looked so dedicated. Isn't it? He looks very dedicated. It's a bewildering story. When I read it, I was bewildered until I read the purport. He wanted to keep up the standard of social etiquette. Bhaktisiddhanta says this thing, that he wanted to keep up the standard, the moral that you can only make advancement by approaching a guru. If I'm rejected by my guru, then no one would accept my dedication. Therefore, in order to keep up the show, he immediately gave his thumb. But he was not happy because he still didn't accept the order of Dronacharya. Rather, he fought against Krishna, and later on he was killed by Krishna. So in this way, one can be deluded into thinking that there's deep dedication. But without going through the doorway of bhakti, no question of bhakti. Still only the doorstep of bhakti, but not actually in the house of bhakti. How you go through the doorway? So you have to accept lotus feet of guru, take initiation from him, and inquire from him, what do you want me to do? That is required. Otherwise, no question of bhakti. It is simply imagination. Are there any questions? I tried to finish earlier, but anyway, it'll for. Yeah.
Thank you for your class. So, we understand that the devotee, he's the shelter of devotion. And so, like you were explaining, we have to approach the devotee to get that. So, I have a question. There's two scenarios I can think of. One in which a devotee really wants to make advancement, but due to his experience in the material world, he's not able to develop a proper relationship with the devotee from whom he can get devotion. And so he carries on, like you were saying, he practices devotional service using his own intelligence, deriving lessons from here and there, without that strong feeling of surrender and commitment to a devotee, and then feeling frustrated and not making the sufficient advancement, not experiencing self-satisfaction that allows him to keep going further. So what should such a person do? And then on the other hand, you have somebody who may have all those things. He may have a committed relationship with a devotee. He may have, you know, to some extent, he may have even surrendered. And he may be driving a lot of practical tutelage, like you were saying. But for lack of maybe, you know, the multidimensional coverings in the heart, you know, different things, his gratitude or his appreciation isn't able to rise to a significant level by which he can truly, derive, you know, very deep lessons from this association. So what should such a person do? So see, there's two scenarios here. I was wondering if you could comment on each.
Well, the answer is sadhu sangha for both. Before the stage of bhajana kriya, where there's a shelter of the guru in progress, there's a stage of sadhu sangha. And in the both examples you're giving, it is due to the impressions of karma that prevents a person from either taking shelter of guru or taking advantage of the shelter once having obtained it. And due to the limitless impressions, oh, so many bad experiences in the material world, this, that, and the other. And so therefore, to give encouragement for doing the needful, and after doing the needful, for really benefiting further, then sadhu sangha is required. And his essay on sangha tyagat, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes that there's two, he says sangha has two meanings. Association, of course we know, and attachment. Association, and of course sangha means attachment also. Then he said attachment is of two types. Attachment to prejudices and attachment to assets. And then attachment to prejudices, he mentions, is of two types. Prejudices that are like long-standing for many, many lifetimes, and prejudices that are acquired in this lifetime, right? So then the prejudices that are acquired from many, many births, that's what we call our swabhava, right? We heard from His Holiness Rompa Maharaj Vyasapujajas. The swabhava is referring to the prejudices brought about from our experience in the material world over many lifetimes. So I like this, I don't like this. And it's like very natural. We think this is like, this is my nature, right? My nature is who I am. But that it's actually the prejudices that we've accumulated from many lifetimes. So then he said, and dissolving the prejudices that are accumulated over many lifetimes, the only way that is done is through sadhu sangha. That's his answer. Another simple answer he gives. He said, even if you can't do anything else but sit next to a sadhu, and you will be benefited from, you will be purified of such undue attachment to prejudices, which we call our swabhava. Right? Maharaj was telling us the same message. He said, take shelter of the holy name of Krishna, and take shelter of sadhu sangha. That was the prominent message over the weekend. So that's the only hope. In terms of, actually, the problem you're describing is due to attachment to prejudices. This is who I am, right? And it's so deeply rooted, we can't get out of it. So the only hope is to get inspiration and encouragement from our association with, you know, saintly persons. Well, what if I'm not able to associate with the sadhus on account of my attachment to prejudices? Then the material cycle continues until you get sufficient sukriti to have the necessary faith to do the needful. The purpose of the accumulation of bhakti sukriti is to generate faith in the association of devotees and the association of the activities of bhakti. One who has insufficient faith, that is due to, this is what Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he quotes many things actually. This is, Prabhupada also quotes in CC. This is due to insufficient sukriti. So it may be the case in certain persons' lives that this life will be a life of accumulating more sukriti for a valiant try in some future birth. For those of us who may be fortunate enough to actually hear and take seriously the messages of Krishna consciousness, we may be able to overcome the influence of the material impressions in this life and do the needful in this life, if we're fortunate. Bhagavan Jiva can never be underestimated. I always like to make that point. You know, it's mentioned in so many places, fortunate, by good fortune. We think it is our rightful claim, but it's a really good fortune to even hear one class. Well, to speak, we're hearing so much, but are we? To actually hear one class is like a good fortune. You know, you can really come out of the class like, you know, have a celebration, a party. And they say, wow, you look, what happened? I heard my first class today. But you've been around for 25 years, I know. I finally was able to hear one class after all these years. It is a great fortune, actually. We underestimate the value of being able to actually do something like hearing, because we think we're doing it in a really real way, which, you know, may not actually be the case. And it will be seen by the inability to overcome the influence of our various vasanas impressions. So in some person's lives, that may be the reality. And in other person's life, they may get it together in this life and do the needful. And even if they don't go back home back to Godhead in this life, they will build momentum to continue with that mentality in another lifetime. You know, in other words, it will be easier to associate with devotees in the future. And Krishna will certainly make that arrangement by dint of their having done some devotional service in this life. But, you know, according to our own level of seriousness, we may not want to do that. So we have to try to do the needful now and hear, get the point, and follow. It is not that surrender is easy for anyone. You know, it's like, oh, the great Mahabharatas, they surrender, you know, but there are Mahabharatas, but we have to, you know, it's just too hard. But actually, it's a subjective experience. So like what Prahlad Maharaj was experiencing from his father, we also experience probably in the same intensity when we get instructed by like the temple president on account of our low level of consciousness, right? You understand? It's all is very subjective. So it's like Prahlad Maharaj was experiencing the torment of Hiranyakashipu, right? And then we get an instruction from our guru and we also feel tormented. Oh, I feel like I'm being burned alive. I feel like I've been thrown off the top of a mountain like Prahlad Maharaj. Because it's really subjective, right? So the point is that surrender is going to be tough for anyone. And the difference between Mahabharatas and us is that they make that choice. They actually surrender to Krishna and we don't. That's really the only difference. So, like that. Sadhu Sangha is the answer for both questions. Hare Krishna. Yeah.
I understand that there's three levels of association that are necessary.
Three levels of association?
Mm-hmm. What's that? Senior, our own, and then tutoring. Okay, cool. Or mentoring. So my question is personal. I tend to associate more with instructions, although not undeviatingly. But and I wanted to know if that level of association would be enough. If one has the great fortune, let's say, of associating with an instruction.
That depends on the advancement of the individual. Like Srila Prabhupada was associating with the instruction, right? He came to America and you know, started the Hare Krishna explosion through association with the instruction. But that's because Srila Prabhupada was also a very advanced devotee. He's able to do that. for those of us who may not be so advanced, we require so much of support in other arenas because there are many blind spots in our application of Krishna consciousness. So then the association with equals or other senior devotees will help to point out those blind spots. Boom, 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 boom. Like that. So it is saying that friendship is a very valuable commodity in Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada also had friends. It is not that we should think he didn't have friends. He had, and he would get his encouragement from his friends, other disciples of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. It's not like Srila Prabhupada was living in a bubble. You know, he would write letters to his god brothers, and you know, some of them were favorable to him. They would give him encouragement and so on. He had his friends in Krishna consciousness. He set up that example also. So, depending on the maturity of the devotee, he'll be able to actually successfully do that. Generally, it is seen with immature devotees, they'll get like focused in, so-called focused in on instruction, and start doing the bulldozer effect. Get out of my way, boom, 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 and follow the instruction of my guru, like that. Then that person will commit operatum only, then he'll fall down like that. He's not advanced at least. So we need, you know, we should actually, you know, we should accept our minute position. We need so much of support in Krishna consciousness. If we're not seeing Krishna, anyone here seeing Krishna? Seeing his colors, his form, his toes? Anyone is seeing his toes recently? His beautiful toes that we always speak about in the Bhagavatam? Anyone seeing? No one's seen his toes, huh? Anyone seeing his beautiful colors, you know, changing according to his meditation? No one's seeing, huh? Anyone seeing his, you know, his three bending form? Tribhangi, we call him Tribhangi for this. Anyone seeing recently? Okay, so if we're not seeing Krishna, then we require so much help in the stage of sadhana. That's a fact. And the devotee who's able to honor that reality, I'm very small, I can be attracted to Maya at any moment, I need shelter, then, you know, he'll be protected along the way. Like that. Hare Krishna, you wanted to say something, I saw.
I'm sorry, it's so hard to remember things. My mind is like... Well, first of all, you made this nice presentation about the Ekalavya thing, which is really confusing, the whole situation. Because Dronacharya is even like on the other side of the battle and everything. It's like all crazy. Yeah. Wow. But anyway, this point about you expressed specifically your experience. So many devotees say, like, I'm hearing from here, I'm hearing from there, I've got this Shiksha Guru, yada yada, etc. And this point, Himanshu Prabhu also raises something about us feeling, being able to feel connected to some devotee or something. His, not his words exactly, but sometimes people are looking like that because they're like, oh, well, where I am now, I don't get anything from that. So let me find this person. I like hearing from him. I like. So in some sense, like you're expressing, the sadhu sangha is valuable wherever we can find it. But still, one has to come back to that principle, right? Of I have to actually have a spiritual master who accepts me as a disciple and whatever. So that has to be other things. Like somehow, if we can get inspired in Krishna consciousness, can be valuable if we actually are willing to surrender to the actual process. I was thinking, it's not like I'm just going to float around and somehow it's going to happen. Like I still have to come to the actual process. But you know, if I do it. This, I read Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj's books or something, whatever, blah, blah, blah. I feel inspired and something. Eventually, if I come to appreciating my, you know, need to connect to properly, then it has some value. I was feeling that that's a valid understanding. Not without that, but... and then the other point you also made was that sometimes it's going to be that people can't make as much advancement because they haven't actually gotten Sukriti. It's like they were eligible to engage in devotional service because they somehow got attracted to following some devotee or something. So I was just appreciating for myself, like, wow. Not me practicing, but for my view of devotees and things is just You know, we don't really know where people are in their Krishna consciousness. We don't really know what they're going through in this lifetime and everything. And it just opened up for me kind of a little bit more wider perspective you know, just what devotees are really doing here. Like Prabhupada had so many disciples and some of them may have gone away or whatever, but it's all glorious, you know, like they're getting the opportunity to make advancement from wherever they are. And we don't have to say like, well, you know, everybody, you should be here or you should be there, or, you know, it's just somehow help each other move along, you know, as far as we can and appreciate the mercy that's coming and everybody's getting some of it. And, I don't know, that's just an appreciation that I had from my side. Like, people are at so many different levels. It doesn't really matter so much, you know, for me. It's just we all are trying to get whatever we can get and just be appreciative of that. Just some thoughts that came up from your class.
No, it depends on what the individual wants for his life. You know, if he's not so fixed on wanting Krishna, then he might be satisfied with anything. But if he becomes fixed on the actual goal of life, he might be more specific in his, you know, particular desire like that. You wanted to say something on that?
No, could you, before I move, if you don't mind, I was trying to understand more what you're saying to connect with what I was saying.
No, I mean, you're saying we should appreciate, you know, people are at different levels and they get some benefit here and there.
Yeah.
And, you know, like that, it doesn't matter for the individual, just everyone is benefiting some way like that. Mm. And I say, yeah, that's true. And someone will be satisfied with that mentality depending on their fixity or lack of fixity on the actual goal of their life, which is Krishna. So if they're not fixed on their goal of life, then one might be satisfied with anything. You know, somehow I'm getting purified and I can go for some future try. Some future birth.
I don't think anybody is really thinking like that. Well, maybe there are people who are thinking
I mean, oftentimes it is expressed like, you know, the 50%, 51% next life. And so it's a little subtle. It's a little subtle, but it will come up and it would be perceivable in our application of the process of Krishna consciousness. You know, like lackluster practice versus like a very intent. A practice with intention. You know, listen, dragging, okay, gotta go to the Mangalarti, gotta go to class, and everything's just like cruise control. And then there's gonna be another devotee who's just like, you know, and I.
Yeah, you're right.
Anyway, not going into details, but that could be this and that. Just the idea is that he's performing his devotional service with some intention. That's obviously gonna be more powerful than. Yeah, anything goes, whatever I can do in this life. And, you know, if I make it, if I don't make it, that's in the realm of Krishna. And these things are all true, in fact. But the devotee who is trying to attain Krishna, he's not thinking like that. He's thinking, I'm going to get Krishna in this life. There's a nice verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, which describes the holy name of Krishna as the bow, and the living entity's pure life as the arrow, and then shooting towards Krishna. You know, so then in the Purport Prabhupada says, but this analogy seems a little bit kind of weird because you're shooting arrows at Krishna. You know, Prabhupada says like this. But he says, but because Krishna lacks the chivalrous rasa, so he will bless you by such an attempt. So real heroism in this context means to fight with Krishna, so to speak. Shoot arrows at Krishna, the arrow of our pure life combined with the chanting of the holy name of Krishna, directed at Krishna. And because Krishna appreciates the chivalrous rasa, he will certainly be kind to such a living entity. So, like, you know, practice with intent versus, you know, whatever goes. It's going to yield a different result. So as friends, we as individuals, we should understand that everyone's where they're at. We should really appreciate that people are at different levels of adhikar, then the tendency to criticize will reduce. The tendency to, at least the thought may come up, but you won't give much energy to it if you can just appreciate that people are on different levels of adhikar. But as friends, we should always try to inspire each other towards the highest ideal. That's what it means to really be a friend. Not that you make me comfortable in the material world, I make you comfortable in the material world, and we both go to hell, you know, by remaining in the material world. Even if you go to Swargaloka, it's hell because it's the material world. So friendship means to encourage us towards our highest pursuit, you know, by the proper methodologies as given through Guru Parampara. That is a friend. Not that you make me lackluster. You know, don't, you know, like, let's say, like for prasadam, you know, so many devotees got so many different standards, you know. Okay, we're going on a road trip. It's okay if you buy little crackers and a little bit of this and a little bit of that. You know, we don't have to be fanatical, right? And then they'll probably quote some Prabhupada story, you know, to substantiate their, you know, mediocrity like that. And then expect everyone to jump on board. And then he said, that's a friend? That's not really a friend. And in the spiritual sense, a real friend will tell us, you know, the ice is cracking. We're probably going to die if it cracks and we're not off the ice in a sufficient amount of time. So I just wanted to encourage you to run. I'm about to run myself. You know, and then that's a friend, you know. Like the verse Maharaj was reading from, you know, the famous verse. Today I've given up sense gratification. From now on, I've given up. I think down the Paramahansa joke. Oh, you're doing sense gratification? From today on, I also do sense gratification. And then call it friendship. You know, this is not friendship. Friendship means to help us direct our consciousness toward our highest aim, which is the lotus feet of Krishna. And in the spiritual world, and of course, in trying to attain that by the proper methodology, you know. So that's what I was getting from, you know. Although on a personal level, we say everyone's at different levels. You know, that's cool. Everyone's getting benefits somehow or other. Bhakta Ed just took 4 cups of sweets. You know, boom, boom, boom. And I'm walking down the stairs, and I see him. Oh. That cup of birth, you know, did you think maybe I might want a few, you know? I didn't think that. I didn't even notice that he had the cups at first. He was walking, and he said, Prabhu, these are not all for me. I said, oh, really? And then he said, he has so many people at his workplace, they got attached for the sweets. So he said, now they're demanding every day. So then we feel very happy. Oh, they're getting some benefit, you know, how nice. And then they might come to the temple and they participate to some degree. Oh, how they're benefit. On an individual level, we may think like that. But in our own personal sangha, we should be trying to light the fire of desire for the lotus feet of Krishna, so that that fire may also attract Krishna's attention, and he will eat us, so to speak. Baba Grahi Janardana, like that. Eat our activities that we're offering to him and so on.
So, because when I was saying it, thank you for going deeper into the matter. When I was saying it, I didn't express it clearly. When I was saying it, I was thinking of persons who it seemed they did very intensely following instructions or something like that, but still, like, they, you know, didn't actually reach a higher level of understanding and Krishna consciousness.
Yeah,
you know, and that's hard to that was kind of more what I was thinking personally. Like the other aspect is there too. I don't have so much appreciation for the other aspect, to be honest with you. It's harder for me to appreciate. I was appreciating this particular point that so many people have done like really intense devotional service, but still some, you know, whatever misconception or whatever, blah, 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 it takes them away, you know.
No.
Chaktuasa dharmam charanam bhujam harer, whatever kind of thing, so.
What a lot of devotees, from what we hear historically, that they were intensely engaged in the services of Srila Prabhupada, but they didn't have proper regard for each other. And that creates, of course, a situation of operatum, and that kicks you out of Krishna consciousness. So I think Srila Prabhupada Maharaj was expressing how it was like, we were all just like Prabhupada, you know, we didn't have any respect for each other, but it was all Prabhupada. And then he asked Jitendra Prabhu, you know, do you recall that? And then Jitendra Prabhu said, that's how I remembered it. You know, all eyes on Prabhupada, no regard for each other, but all eyes on Prabhupada. So that your point connects what I was trying to express in the discussion, that due to this situation, how you will remain, our creeper needs support all the way up to the lotus feet of Krishna. And therefore, if we don't have proper regard, respect, and then that leads to operatum, you know, misgivings and doubts and then offenses, and then that kicks you out. Of course, devotees get attracted by sense gratification, right? But that is on account of operatum, according to what our acharyas. When one chants the holy name of Krishna, committing the various offenses to Krishna, that increases the fire of sensual desire. right? That's described by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Prabhupada quotes that in his purport in Chaitanya Charitamrita. So it is very important to chant without offenses, which requires the proper regard for Vaishnavas to do that effectively. Therefore, Majjana Hai Bhajana, Soru Sangha Nukshana, Avidya Agyana Parajai, Narottam Das Thakur says like this, that if you constantly associate with sadhus, then your bhajan will be cleansed of all aparad and impurities, anartas, and then you'll be able to conquer over ignorance. So we should take shelter of these very simple and valuable instructions. Back home, back to God. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Stop.